Brilliance Audio presents the unabridged recording of The Paladin Caper by Patrick Weeks, performed by Justine Eyre. One. To a commoner, the Forge of the Ancients looked like an old tower, an hour's carriage ride from the Westyke family estate, almost a day from any locale of note, and a full week's travel from one of the port cities, over which the floating capital of Heavenspire hovered in its slow circle around the Republic. The tower was squat and sturdy, and a trick of its construction made it look wider in the middle than at the top or bottom, which had given rise to its local nickname, the Barrel. And while it was in no danger of falling down, the structure had no practical purpose that any local peasant could remember. That humble facade, Handel Westyke knew, was entirely by design. The peasants of the world did not need to know what happened in the forge. Such knowledge would only frighten and confuse them, and recent times had been confusing enough already. The Republic and the Empire had nearly gone to war after some evil fairy creature had raised an undead army to incite hostilities, and in the chaos, Archvoyant Bertram had disappeared. It was the second presumed death of an Archvoyant in less than a year, and it had left Archvoyant Severt of the Skilled Party in charge of the Republic as a result. Westyke had never met Severt, but he knew the man's politics. In a few short months, Severt had pushed through new education and trade initiatives. The Skilled had come from peasants, and Westyke knew it was only a matter of time before the Archvoyant's little bills increased the taxes on the families that had made the Republic, so that all the peasants could feel better about themselves. Archvoyant Severt was an Orajar as well. Judging a man by the colour of his skin was the mark of a foolish and uneducated mind. And Westyke would certainly have no problem with an Orajar who worked his way into a position of power and then respected the heritage that had come before. That said, Westyke could not help but feel that Severt had turned the colour of his skin into a sort of agenda, and upsetting the delicate balance of the Republic because of what had or had not been done to someone's ancestors was also the mark of a foolish and uneducated mind. Such were the thoughts that plagued Westyke as he made his way to the Forge of the Ancients that morning. He had hired travelling performers to entertain at his estate last night, which had kept him up quite late, and he would quite happily have rested for most of the morning had it been an option. However, the airship was due to arrive in just a few days, and it was vital that everything be on schedule, so there would sadly be no rest for the weary. There were times, Westyke mused from his carriage, as he idly watched the side of the road pass, when carrying a legacy seemed entirely unfair. With his mind, he could have been up on Heaven's Spire, making his voice heard, or even serving on the Voyancy. He could have lived in one of the port cities, which were the home of most of the Republic's exciting culture, instead of the relative backwater of his family estate. It was unfair, when viewed objectively. But it was also necessary. The peasants in their little homes, barely working hard enough to bring Westyke's estate enough coin to pay the ever-increasing taxes, would never know what Westyke did. The lords and ladies in the port cities might think him an aimless layabout who did nothing with his time. They could not understand or appreciate the work he did. At least, not yet. Still watching the road, Westyke covered a yawn with his hand and smiled. His family had told him that maintaining the forge might well be a secret he lived his whole life, passing it only to his oldest son to carry forward. Diligent as they were, they could never have imagined that the end point of this secret work would pay off in Westyke's lifetime, that the legendary ancients would return to this world. The reports did not say specifically that Westyke's work maintaining the forge was partially responsible for the ancients finally returning. But to deny one's own accomplishments was the mark of a weak mind, and Westyke's work was too important for weak minds. He was imagining what part of the Republic he might choose to rule if the ancients gave him an option, when the carriage jerked and slowed. Westyke glared and rapped on the partition separating him from the driver up front.
"Hey!"
he began, and when he realized that he did not remember which of the servants was driving him this morning, slid smoothly into,
"What's the matter?" "You should see, my lord."
It was Hestridge. Westyke liked the old man. He still used my lord, even when many of the commoners had found it trendy to stop using the honorific. Westyke looked out the window and saw immediately why his man had halted the carriage. An armoured figure walked on the side of the road, apparently heading for the forge, just like Westyke himself. Its ringmail was golden, covered with a long, dark cloak, and a masked golden helmet obscured the figure's face. It was a hunter golem. Of the few who had even heard of these rare magical constructs, most knew only that they had been built by the ancients and tasked with hunting the fairy creatures who had spawned, like tiny parasites, from the ancients' magic after the ancients themselves had departed. Almost no living creature knew what the hunters did with that magical energy once they captured and destroyed the fairy creatures. This hunter did not seem to be carrying any of its magical weaponry. The net that ensnared its target, and the spear that destroyed the fairy creature and absorbed the energy. Instead, it carried what looked a great deal like a makeshift silver birdcage, in which a small white dove sat uncomfortably on a wooden perch. This promised to be interesting, Westyke thought, and said,
"Hunter, state your designation and status."
"Director," said the hunter.
"I am Hunter Mirka."
"Wait, that can't be right," Westyke exclaimed. "We thought that Mirkur was destroyed up on Heaven's Spire several months ago."
"I was rendered inoperative in battle," Mirkur confirmed. "But the golems working on using Heaven's Spire to attack the Empire discovered my remains and were able to restore me to functional status."
"Excellent," Westyke beamed. "Always hate to lose one of my people. What about your spear, though?"
"I attempted to kill a death priestess who opposed my efforts, but her magical abilities allowed her to transform my spear," Mirkur said. "The golems who reconstructed me told me to come back here for replacement."
"Of course, of course,"
Westyke hid a smile.
"Well, if you're still recovering, why don't you climb up and ride along? Estridge, the door."
Westyke moved over while his servant descended and opened the door for Hunter Mirkur, who climbed inside and sat down. It looked around for somewhere to put the silver birdcage.
"Shall I have Estridge put that in the rear for you?" Westyke asked.
"No, that is not necessary," said Mirkur after a brief pause. "I must watch her closely."
"Her," Westyke noted, and hid another smile as Mirkur put the birdcage in its lap.
"A fairy creature, I assume?"
"Yes. While I was unable to absorb the fairy creature's energy due to the loss of my spear, I captured her, nevertheless."
"Is there any reason you did not simply kill her with the silver and then bring her remains back to the forge?"
Westyke asked, as the carriage rocked into motion again.
"I did not believe that would save an acceptable level of magic," Mirkur said. "My judgment may be impaired by lingering damage," it added quickly.
Then, as an afterthought, the golem said,
"This is not a normal fairy creature. Her name is Ululenia. She was part of the group responsible for stopping the ancients from controlling Heaven's Spire. The golems who repaired me asked that she be brought to the forge for interrogation."
"Right, right,"
Westyke nodded.
"We'll do just that, of course, and we'll get you fully repaired and back out into the field with a new spear."
"Good," Mirkur said. "There is much work to be done. Many of those responsible for disrupting the operation at Heaven's Spire remain unaccounted for."
"Yes, my report said as much. There was an alchemist named Tern and an imperial acrobat called Icy, I believe. A wizard called Hessler who specialized in illusions and, of course, the death priestess."
"Diz, Isadora, yes. Also a man named Kale."
"Yes, a scout who served alongside Captain Isifacira de Lockenville, known more colloquially as Locke." "I doubt he is of any concern,"
Westyke added with a smile.
"At least not compared to a death priestess and a wizard."
"They are all dangerous in their own ways," Mirkur said.
And Westyke nodded politely and allowed silence to fall inside the carriage. In a quarter of an hour they had reached the forge. Estridge opened the carriage door, and Westyke stepped out, stretching his arms as he always did after the arduous ride. He carried a beautifully carved walking stick, the shaft dark, and the hooked head carved in the shape of a dragon, with twin rubies for eyes. He did not need a walking stick, of course, but he enjoyed using it to gesture when he gave orders. The strange, bulbous shape of the tower seemed even more exaggerated when seen up close, and Westyke sighed as he often did, wishing that the ancients might have seen fit to do such important work in a building more impressive in scope.
"Back at 4:30 today, Hestridge," Westyke said.
"Of course, my lord."
It was a bit earlier than he usually asked to be picked up, but Westyke was still tired, and he suspected that the day was going to be an exciting one. Westyke walked slowly around the tower as Hestridge drove off. Mirka followed, still carrying the silver birdcage with the white dove that was apparently the dangerous shapeshifter Ululenia. When he reached a point on the far side from the road, Westyke drew a small crystal from the pocket of his coat and held it out toward the tower. The stone, at about eye level, seemingly no different from any other, glowed softly in response to the crystal. A moment later, the stone folded in upon itself, twisting away and leaving a gap. The stones around it followed suit, like ripples spreading from a rock dropped into a pond, and as they twisted away as well, they left a large arched doorway leading in. Westyke stepped into the tower without hesitation, and Mirka followed. The room inside was large and circular, taking up much of the space of the tower, and it had no visible doors save the one Westyke had just come through. Unlike the outside of the tower, however, the floor was impressively wrought of glossy black stone, inlaid with ribbons of gold, and the walls were ringed with glowing crystals that bathed the room in pale light. A trio of hunters stood near the center of the room. All wore golden ringmail and carried spears that crackled with magical energy, but one wore a helmet with a single red plume. Westyke nodded to the plumed hunter and spun his walking stick jauntily, like one of the performing girls from last night.
"Commander Mirok."
"Sir."
The hunter's attention shifted to Mirka.
"Orders."
"It's all right, Mirok."
Westyke stepped forward quickly before Mirok could say anything more.
"Hunter Mirka suffered a great deal of damage and still needs further repairs. I'm allowing him access without his own entry crystal per the Camoset protocol."
He lifted his walking stick and pantomimed wrapping it against the side of his head. Mirok nodded.
"Understood."
It waited until Westyke and Mirka were safely inside the room, and then it lifted its free hand and gestured. The door to the outside world slid shut, and a moment later, with a tiny hum, the floor itself began to descend. The glowing crystals were set every few feet in the walls around the room, and Westyke watched them rise as the floor sank. The walls of their descent tunnel were lined with more crystals, so that as the first disappeared, a new light source appeared around the floor. Westyke had always loved the steady, humming flow of the lights sliding up and away as he descended into the darkness. It was as though the lights were the humble disguise of a modest noble that he showed the world, cast away as he went down into the depths so that only his true self remained.
"How goes production?" he asked Mirok.
"There has been a slight decrease, as most of the human workers have fallen ill. They've been sent home to avoid infecting others, with silence charms employed, as per standard procedure."
"Of course, can't have them talking about this place with the peasants. That's how rumours find their way to the ears of the criminals who might fight against us."
Westyke listened to the hum of the descending floor and to all the little noises of the Great Forge, where he spent most of his waking days.
"It may be worth using detection charms to track the workers when they return, Commander. I'd hate to think of any parasites sneaking into this place by taking advantage of people doing their duty."
"Understood, sir."
Mirok tapped a crystal on the wristband of his golden gauntlet. A few moments later, the floor came to a halt, revealing a large arched doorway lined in the same glossy black stone as the floor itself, and Westyke stepped through into the enormous underground chamber of the forge. The ceiling, high overhead, was a great dome of gold from which hung countless teardrops of beautifully glowing green crystal. Westyke stood on a walkway of glossy black stone, now ribboned with runes of the same green. The walkway formed a grid of high vantage points, and looking down he could see the forge at work. To the left, crystals were growing, bathed in the light from the dome crystals overhead. Up ahead, a moving belt fed crystal into a great ancient tunnel, and half-formed hunters emerged on the other side. Off to the right, vast blue cylinders held the recaptured essence of the ancient magic, recovered from the fairy creatures, and returned to where Westyke knew it belonged. The cylinders glowed healthily. This close to the monthly arrival, they were close to full capacity. Westyke's new assistant bounced over from his office as he looked out across the forge. She was a short, apple-cheeked young woman with spectacles and a somewhat annoying tendency to say everything as though she was asking a question, but she was also quite good with crystals.
"Looks like it's just you and me and the golems here today, sir. I was worried you got the cold that's going around when you went in earlier. I don't know if it was something in the food or..."
"I'm fine, Laradai," Westyke grinned. "Better than fine, in fact. This month has seen many fairy creatures brought back, and I believe we'll have something more to deliver. Mirok?"
"Virim, to your business," Commander Mirok said. "Kaemor, subdue him."
One of the two hunters spun, knocked the birdcage from Hunter Mirka's arms, and drove a fist into the golem's stomach. An actual hunter would still be doubled over by the simple laws of physics, but would recover almost immediately, given that the ancients had designed hunters to survive long periods, with much of their internal components damaged or destroyed. The fairy creatures were savage and unpredictable, after all. This hunter sank to its knees with a grunt.
"Oh my wow!" Laradai cried out.
The birdcage rolled and rattled on the polished stone floor, the dove flapping frantically inside as the other hunter walked off to tend to its duties.
"Mr. Kale, I believe," Westyke said with some satisfaction, and pulled the figure's helmet off.
Underneath, an Orajar man coughed and wheezed.
"Welcome to the forge."
"There isn't actually a Camoset protocol, huh?" he said, gasping and trying to catch his breath.
"Not as such," said Westyke. "You see, Kale, no hunter would ever take a fairy creature alive, nor would it ever refer to one as she rather than it. Nor would anyone who knows anything about the ancients expect that an injured hunter would be sent back to get a new spear, since the spear is far more complex and difficult to create than the hunter body itself. A hunter who lost its spear would most likely return any individual consciousness that could benefit the organization's work, and then allow itself to be stripped down for parts. Because unlike you, Mr. Kale, the hunters understand their place in this world." "Hooray for them," Kale wheezed.
"I don't understand, sir," Laradai said, or possibly asked. "If you knew that this wasn't really a hunter, why did you let him inside the forge? I mean, I haven't been here very long, but there are security concerns, and maybe..."
"The thing about Mr. Kale," Westyke said, pointing at the man with his walking stick, "is that he and his little team are fundamentally cheaters. You know what that means, Laradai?" "The hunters know their place in this world. They don't complain. I know my place, you know yours, but some people... they just don't. And Mr. Kale was part of a team of thieves that caused a great deal of trouble. Instead of working to earn the things they wanted, they steal and play tricks and cheat because they think that they're entitled to more and that they can get away with it. Mirok, are we ready?"